Welcome back to Go Forth the Nerd. This is Jesse Bray, also known as Mr. Bray, and I'm your resident nerd. And today I have my new friend, Ben Cleaver, on, and he's an actor, director, producer, and all-around nerd. So you want to say hello, Ben?
Hi, Ben.
No. Hey!
That's one of the oldest ones in the book.
Yeah.
Sorry. Hi, thank you so much for having me on the show today. I really appreciate it. I'm super stoked.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit. Tell the world a little bit about yourself. You know,
the world.
Who are you, and what do you do? Who's your daddy? And what's you do?
Well, I'm a good old boy. Okay. I grew up. I was born and raised in a small town in Kansas. And around when I was about 25, 26, I moved to LA to pursue acting as a career.
Okay.
I've been out here. I've been out here for 7 years now.
Wow. Okay.
So yeah, I'm about to turn 33, and one of the highlights of my career thus far has been what we're here to talk about today, which is Atropa.
Yeah.
I'm super excited about this show, about this project, and just really excited to kind of talk to you about it. You've already talked to the director and one of the other actors, at least. Have you talked to anybody else besides Eli? And
I've only talked to you. Tony and Eli. So, but Eli had a lot of the hush-hush, and hopefully
yeah.
Eli,
so,
and, yeah.
At this point, you probably know more about the project than I do.
Like, maybe.
Apart from having read the entire script and performed it, like, that's where it ends for me. Like, I haven't seen footage. I've seen about 5 minutes of footage because of when I went in to do ADR, which, if you don't know, or if your listeners don't know, ADR is when they need a different take of sound. Like, they have the video that they like from the filming, but there's something wrong with the audio, or it didn't sound quite right, and so you have to go in and record your voice and kind of have to lip sync your voice with yourself on the screen.
Okay.
So I had to go in and do a couple of lines in ADR because something didn't work out with the sound, but they wanted to use those takes. And so I saw some footage, and I saw some of the rough CGI, which for me, that was the first time I'd ever seen myself in a CGI environment on film. And it was just the rough, building, not rendered, kind of placeholder CGI.
Oh, yeah.
But even then, it was I had flashbacks to when I was a kid and I was watching the making of Jurassic Park or the making of Episode One or whatever, when I was a kid. And I was so stoked about it because I'm a huge nerd. I'm not just I'm an actor, but I'm not an actor, I got into this because I want to tell stories and I want to do something that has an impact artistically, but I'm also a huge nerd. I'm wearing my Doctor Who shirt. I love Star Wars. I love Star Trek as well.
Nice.
I'm stoked for the new show.
Same.
And, so it's, just an honor and a privilege and just, an homage to my 12-year-old self.
To be a part of what I think Atropa is going to be like. I mean, this is the way I see it. It's good. It's hot. Okay, it's a great pilot. You guys are fantastic. I mean, it's like, oh, this is great. I know, and I don't know if you've ever been compared to this, and people can't actually see your picture, but when I post this with the social graphic, your presence kind of reminds me of a young Lee Schreiber. I'm serious, dude.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. It's funny that you say that because the two, kind of look-alike celebrities that I get the most are Seth Rogen, except then people immediately amend that and they say, except Seth Rogen's younger, thinner, better-looking brother.
That's not really...
At which point, I just feel bad for Seth Rogen.
Yeah, exactly.
He's not a bad looking guy. He's a good guy, but the other one is Liev Schreiber. I always get Liev Schreiber. And the funny thing is, I enjoy doing cosplay.
Yeah.
At comic book conventions and that sort of thing. And one of the characters I cosplay is Sabretooth from Wolverine Origins.
Yes.
Who's played by Liev Schreiber. And I've done a couple of photo shoots with a buddy of mine named Lon Brown, who goes by the cosplay name Monster Mash online.
Nice.
If you check him out on Instagram and Facebook, he's got a huge presence. And he is basically a Hugh Jackman Wolverine cosplayer. That's his primary.
Awesome.
He has a couple other cosplays here and there. But He and I have done a handful of photo shoots as Sabretooth and Wolverine.
Oh, that's awesome,
it's
dude.
Pretty wild stuff. It's
yeah, I'm going there right after this. I got to check that out. That sounds awesome.
Dude, you got to check it out.
Yeah. Well, and here,
but yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
For you to say that, that's extremely flattering and honoring.
Well, it's like, I mean, it's like, I mean, I sometimes people don't like being compared, you know, to other people. But I mean, like, honestly, you're in the realm of nerd, looking like Sabretooth. Younger Sabretooth. That can't hurt, right?
No, of course not.
What I like to do sometimes on the podcast is to unpack some of the technical stuff because you know we're in the realm of film and animation is a little bit different. So ADR, ADR is when you described it like kind of lip syncing. My mind always goes to the ADR lip sync experiences. Do you remember the movie Mrs. Doubtfire?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and so here's Robin Williams, and first off, everyone as far as the animation world has never worked this way. It's only worked this way with Robin Williams and actual ADR. You never look at an animated thing and sort of, at least not an American animation, and just make up great lines. But that's all I can think of. It's just like Figaro, Figaro, just like him doing that bit from Mrs. Doubtfire.
Right. So basically, kind of what it is... let's say we shot this scene, and I'm talking about some... So my character, Andrew Jensen, is kind of the science officer and semi-mechanical engineer.
Okay.
And if you watch the pilot episode of Atropa, you have seen that, you know, we have this big kind of collision at the end of the pilot. That's up online right now, so I can talk about that.
Yeah. Of course.
So then the beginning of the second episode, which... I'm sure Eli and Tony probably talked to you about the real-time spacing between when we shot the pilot and when we shot the rest of the season.
Yeah, it was a year later, right?
It was, I think it was almost 2.5 years
later. Oh, wow. Okay, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
And I can give you kind of a nutshell story about that, too, because it is kind of interesting.
This is what we're here to nerd, man, if you want
to... That's what we're here. That's what we're here to do. But so the opening of the second episode, I'm you know, checking out the computers and like I'm telling them all of the systems that are down. Basically, the system is down.
Yeah.
So I'm on the you know, I'm my character. I'm looking at the computer and I'm saying, oh, you know, we've lost forward shield or whatever the line is, and you know, and then I'm like looking and I'm like, and the engines are down or the engines are offline.
Okay.
And so when we shot that scene, it went great on set. We had some great footage, and then it came back that there was a crackling in the sound or in the microphone. Something was wrong with the boom mic or the loud mic or whatever it was. The sound didn't come through clear.
Ah.
And in that particular shot, if we were going to use that audio, it would have had a crackling in it. So So at that point, they say, okay, we like this shot. This is months later when we're editing, so we can't really go back to the set and reshoot that scene.
Totally.
So we're going to do ADR, which is basically they bring me into a recording studio that's got a big TV screen, and they have the 7-second scene of me listing off all these things that are wrong with the ship. And so basically then they give me a printout of the script of the lines that I'm saying, or a transcript of what I had actually said in the screen. And then it's my job to basically watch the video a handful of times, and then they're going to cut out the audio or give it to me in my ear really quietly, and I have to basically watch myself on the screen and say the words along with myself on the screen so that they can record that audio and overlay it onto the video, so that they get a clear audio of my voice saying my sentence. It's somewhat related to like when they edit a movie for TV.
Yeah.
And they edit the language out.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's the famous one. You know, like with what was it, Major League, where he goes, "Strike this mother effer out."
And they go
in, and for the TV edit, it's "Strike this guy out," and it just totally doesn't match up with his mouth or anything. It's the same concept. Just we're trying to match.
Oh yeah. Oh gosh. Oh, in the realm of sci-fi, one of my absolute favorite sci-fi films. It's a sci-fi comedy. Is Galaxy Quest.
I love Galaxy Quest.
Great movie. And one of my favorite scenes is, remember when they have to go through the chompers? You know, Sigourney Weaver and just straight...
Sigourney Weaver, yes. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And she's clearly saying something other than, well, screw that. And that's so funny because, you know, in that sort of script, they did that for the comedic value. that's pretty great. I like seeing how, like, honestly, the behind the scenes, you talked about when you were a kid earlier about how when you were a kid, you're watching Jurassic Park behind the scenes and stuff like that. And I think that's where the magic of movies have always intrigued me. And I think that's what captures us, the lovers of cinema. So if you can think back outside of Jurassic Park, unless that's the one story, what is one of the earliest stories you have for when you fell in love with film, like storytelling through film?
Oh man. I grew up watching, you know, Disney movies and that sort of thing. I didn't care if I was watching Cinderella, like I was entertained. Like I just liked to be told stories. And have the grandeur and, I liked reading as well. I had a very active imagination, but when you can see it all in front of you, that's a different experience.
Totally.
And so, you know, I, of course, would watch the kids' movies on TV, and most of which I don't even remember anymore, but for whatever reason, I didn't have to. Well, like, for example, The Dark Crystal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Dark Crystal.
I remember seeing that movie, and then I remember watching behind-the-scenes features or whatever about The Dark Crystal, and just, you know, the skepsis in that. You saw how the puppetry worked, and they were guys basically hunched over in these costumes with puppet heads. And that's the same way that Big Bird worked on Sesame Street. It was a guy in a costume with his hand up for the head. And for me, I imagine that for some people, if they approach it more from a pragmatic or a logical point of view, they would say, oh, that kind of spoils the imagery for me. But for me, it almost enhanced it. The artistic nature and the creativity of what it takes to build that sort of thing.
Yeah, totally.
World. I'd say Jim Henson had an incredible impact on me.
Yes.
And really, most stuff that I like I always tell my girlfriend, I'm like, if the movie poster has a giant mouth coming after a human, like I would go see that. You know, it all starts with Jaws, but
yeah.
But you know, Jaws, Jurassic Park, and not to say that, you know, I don't love other kinds of movies, because I love me some dramas and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I love comedy.
Yeah.
But monster movies, I think, were the first ones. Or anything that had a humanoid non-human. For example, Star Wars impacted me tremendously when I was a kid.
Totally.
And I remember this movie, really terrible movie, called Adventures in Dinosaur City.
Oh,
and
man.
And they were kind of trying to capitalize on the whole Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles thing around the early 90s.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you ever remember this movie or not.
Give me some images. So I remember watching a lot of dinosaur stuff.
You know, it was about these kids whose dad was a scientist, and they got into his shop and played around with one of his things, and they were transported to some other dimension where it was almost Planet of the Apes style, where humans were still cavemen, but dinosaurs were kind of humanoid. And
is it Dinotopia? Dinotopia?
No, it was different. It was different from Dinotopia. I know Dinotopia, but it was different from Dinotopia.
Okay.
And I think this one was even a little bit more. What's the word I'm looking for? Just amateur.
Weird.
But they were like, the heroes of this were like a Tyrannosaurus Rex and a Triceratops who walked on two legs and talked and all this kind of stuff. And they fought with like karate and kung fu.
This animated or live action? Because like
live action. It was live action.
Oh, that sounds bad.
I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere. Oh, it's called Adventures in Dinosaur City.
Adventure. Okay, I gotta check that. I got taking notes.
I'm sure it's terrible. Adventures, I'm sure if you sat down and watched it now, it would be awful. But when I was a kid, I loved it, and I loved Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and all these practical effects things. Like, I love CGI, and particularly for stuff like spaceships and that manner of stuff that we have in Atropa, I think it's fantastic. I still love going back to practical effects for monsters and makeup and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that the practical effects, you know, Eli and I were talking about how, because I live in Portland and there's a lot of people who work at Leica here, and I have buds that work at Leica. I've had interns that worked at Leica, and they're like, yeah, you know, they love stop motion people. I think a stop motion artist has the patience of Joe, but also hates themselves because the work that they're doing is just so tedious and soul crushing. Like, you know, 40-hour week is like 6 seconds of animation.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. It's like, I think there's a little bit, because when I was in junior high, I took a tech class, and we played around with not building, like, we had a computer program where you could, like, kind of animate things, but it was with already rendered objects and kind of move them around across the screen. And I looked at, you know, when I was 13 years old or whatever, I was like, I'm computer animating.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's fun, and it's there's a certain sense of satisfaction. But I would imagine a practical artist, and I mean practical as in physical effects.
Sure.
Carving out a puppet or a face or sculpting and that sort of thing, there's a different kind of satisfaction that comes from that.
Oh, totally, totally.
But at the same time, if you've worked for hours and hours and hours, weeks and weeks and weeks on that spaceship flying through space, and then you get it in there and it's rendered and the lighting's done and the you know, the texturing is done and all that kind of stuff, you see that thing flying across the screen, I would imagine you just have to be like, wow.
Yeah, totally. I've had friends where they've animated stuff, and they're like, yeah, they spend, like, you know, 6 weeks of their life on animating some turtle or some weird, or a troll or whatever, and then, and this is in the stop motion realm, I'm like, yeah, I got cut. It's like when, when I got started, I actually was working for studios doing rig removals, and so, like, just basically, so for people who don't know, there's a technique called rotoscoping. And it's where you basically, you paint out images. So, like, a lot of people don't know this, but Snow White, you know, Walt Disney Snow White, she actually was a real human live model, and she was rotoscoped. She wasn't just like the animator just said, I'm going to draw this girl. So doesn't change away the fact it's still talented, still great animation, but they had a live model. So they took the footage and then they traced out her movements. And so the way that's evolved now is that you're painting out the rigging of your skeleton that's walking across or whatever. But that's what I remember doing when I first started. And I loved it for a while, but then after a while it becomes this sort of rotoscope sweatshop where you're just sitting there just painting out frames.
Yeah.
It's pretty tough.
When I was in college, we did a couple of Star Wars short films just for our college's film festival, and I remember with the lightsabers, we had filmed the whole lightsaber fight with basically wooden dowel rods with duct tape up them so that we could see them on the screen, and I just remember, like, five of us sitting on our laptops in Adobe After Effects or whatever it was, just rotoscoping frame by frame because we had to paint out draw over where the dowel rods were in each frame and paint them in to look like lightsabers. It was a tedious process, and it looked okay at the end, but, like, it was our first crack at it.
Totally.
So, like, by The Force Awakens standards, it was pretty rudimentary.
Yeah. I worked on this. It's a Hallmark movie. It's called Jingle All the Way, but it wasn't the one with Arnold Schwarzenegger. It was actually a Hallmark kid stop motion thing. And I remember just painting out all the rigs on this white little fluffy puppy. And that was an entire summer. I was just like, this was so, like, this is tedious. But that's the thing. That's the love that you have for filmmaking. That's part of the process.
Absolutely.
Monster movies were also a seat where I first fell in love with films. I mean, my earliest films were those Godzilla films, the Ray Harryhausen stuff, right? You know, Ray Harryhausen was the king of special effects. And there's just, like, even though now you'd watch them, like, oh, it's Claymations, Clash of the Titans, I still think the original Clash of the Titans is much better than the remake. I love that, so.
Well, and it kind of feels like sometimes when they have all this CGI at their disposal, it kind of, the story and the heart kind of gets sacrificed for a spectacle.
Yeah, yeah, that's very true. I mean, and we're dealing with, when you're dealing with like a story like Clash of the Titans, which is Perseus and all these sort of like Greek gods. These are myths that have been around forever. And so you don't really have to work so hard to come up with the great ideas, right? You should just tell it, but right. add the character. And so right. when I watch some of these films, like, you know, these original stories are pretty imaginative. They don't have to go nuts because it's already kind of nuts. And that's where it is sad, where all the writer really had to do, or the director had to do, was just pour the heart into it. My first absolute love that I fell for a film when I wanted to actually do films, and this is as an animator, and I don't know, because you said you watch a lot of the Disney films, I think you might remember this scene. Rescuers Down Under.
Heck yes.
Yes, Rescuers Down Under, that flying, when you're on all across the plains on the bird's back, like the giant eagle soaring across that field. As a kid, I felt like I was flying. And that's when I knew that movies were amazing. Because it was no longer just a story or just a thing. It was an experience. And that's what I like. That's what I fell in love with. Like, you could experience movies.
And I feel like with that film in particular, not to get too far off of the main topic here, but as long as we're on it, I have such imagery burned into my brain, specifically The Rescuers Down Under.
Great movie.
From the part of the opening when we're introduced to the kid, whose name I can't remember right now. But the kid, when you're first introduced to him, he's asleep in his bed under a bunch of laundry or whatever, and it's just, if they're in the outback, and the window's open, and there's a box fan in the window. So the window's open, there's a box fan in the window that's just kind of, like, janky and rotating. That, something about the feeling that created, you know, that created, I don't want to say an emotional response, but it wasn't really an emotion, it was just a feeling of, like, knowing that environment, or being...
World building,
Yeah, very much world building, and it creates a feeling of what it would be like to be in that hot, with the fan on, because you kind of remember that when you were a kid, and that sort of thing. World building is fantastic.
Yeah, Rescuers Down Under, because, I mean, I remember you remember the first one, right? The original Rescuers, for those who don't want to go on that little trek, it's about these, like, little, I believe they're mice, right? And they go and they solve little crimes, and they help poor little orphan kids. It's a really precious, like, premise. And then the Rescuers Down Under is the Australian one, and I think this was the time when everyone got, like, Australian fever. It's like Yahoo Serious, Crocodile Down Under, what else? My favorite Western, Quigley Down Under. You ever seen Tom Selleck?
Oh, no, I've never seen that one.
Oh, it's a good movie. It's Alan Rickman's in it. Dude, you got yourself a Western to watch. It's a great Western.
I've got to check this out.
Quigley Down Under. It's one of my absolute favorite Westerns. But during this time, I think late 90s, early, whatever in the 90s, where we were just got the Aussie fever. But Rescuers just captured that. That's where, when I think back emotionally, it's more like, almost like being just cocooned with that film, where I felt stuff. And I still feel it. I don't know why. I still get chills thinking about it. Anyways, that's something that I think we all have a moment, right, in time. That said, what drew you to what's your interest into acting? How did you realize that was something that you wanted to become?
Well, you know, I've always been I always tell people I've been a ham since I was a kid, you know, and kind of an attention seeker. An attention seeker, but it's because it's not necessarily because I want everybody to look at me. I want everybody to look at me, and then I'll help you have a good time. Come have fun with me. And kind of a just desire to entertain, because for me, to be entertained and to be to have a story told to me is of such great value to me, and I think that goes as far as anything in human history. I think everything revolves around storytelling. How we learn. It's what our religions are based on. It's what our faith is based on. It's all around storytelling to make us laugh, make us cry, to teach us something, to inspire us to do something. Really, anything that humans do comes from storytelling. Even if you look at, you can choose something boring like an accountant. You still have to go through and look at the story of the funds and figure out what's going on, in a sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would say, you know, at its core, everything in humanity kind of goes back to storytelling.
Totally.
And so that's very important to me, and I knew from a young age that it's something very powerful and it's something I wanted to be involved with. So, you know, there are old camcorder videotapes I've been floating around back at my mom's house, and when I was a kid, I'd set up 3 dining room chairs in the living room, like, get up on them, and that was my stage.
Nice.
You know, try and perform stand-up comedy or whatever. It was all nonsensical and silly, but that was where it started, my love of just getting up and spouting stuff to entertain or what have you.
Nice.
And I love it. And so I grew up doing, you know, a lot of theater, junior, you know, elementary school, junior high school. I'm a musician. I sing.
Nice.
I ended up going to college on a vocal music scholarship. I did quite a bit of musical theater as a young adult, as well as choir and vocal groups and that sort of thing. Performed in rock bands.
Nice.
I play guitar. I play piano. I do all that kind of stuff. And that in and of itself is, you know, a certain amount of showmanship that
totally.
You have to be able to perform. And so it's just something that's kind of driven me my entire life since
totally.
I was a little kid. And I think, you know, it was probably around the age of 7 or 8 where I realized that some people make a living, they spend their lives acting, they can do it on camera. And again, going back to like the practical effects and the special effects, and they can do it with dinosaurs and sharks and whatever.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, and flying X-wings and vipers and all this kind of stuff, you know. So it's always been something that I've strived towards.
Okay.
And, I just want to be involved with.
That's awesome. I mean, I think deep down what makes people in the creative world is they are storytellers. And I've mentioned this multiple times in the podcast, the great thing about certain art forms like music and film and animation, and there are other things as well, even quilting, he falls in this, but it's a communal art form, and there's something about when we all get together to tell a story that has a richer meaning to it. And you don't see it everywhere, you know. You don't really see the preachers like tag someone in and say, all right, let's have someone else kind of share in on this message. It's usually there's certain art forms that have that opportunity.
Sure.
And yeah, story is what connects people. I also think that story is whatever life lesson you have is so much more memorable when you use a story. You know, if you're just cold hard facts, if you just like just tell the news, I usually forget it. Like, tell me if you're this way, because I love comedy, but have you ever noticed you go to a comedy show, like you go to a show and someone's just ripping out joke after joke after joke, and you can only like remember like 3 or 4 of them, and it's usually the story ones,
right?
It's like, yeah. It's their minds. They just, it doesn't stick.
It builds a world.
Yeah, for you. Yeah.
So then you're, because I do stand-up comedy as well.
Oh, nice.
And for those of you in the Los Angeles area, I'll be at the Van Nuys Comedy Club on Wednesday, August 16th.
Oh, nice, nice. Awesome.
But yeah, it's, yeah, absolutely. With comedy, the storytelling aspect, I love a good, like, Will Ferrell movie or whatever, and,
yeah.
And some of those have really great storytelling and really great funny storytelling, but sometimes it's, you know, you see stuff that's just a vehicle for joke after joke after joke.
Non sequiturs, yeah.
Yeah, and to be honest, like, I love Family Guy, but I kind of stopped watching it.
Oh, yeah.
it eventually just kind of became a joke about itself.
Yeah.
And God bless Seth MacFarlane. He's found a money machine. And people love it, and that's great. Like, that's his thing. Go do that, man. And
yeah.
His new kind of Star Trek-ish show that he's doing, have you seen the trailer for this?
No, what is this?
Yeah, Seth MacFarlane has a new show coming out, and it's clearly a Star Trek ripoff. It's like a Galaxy Quest.
Oh, okay. All right, that's fun.
And it looks brilliant, and I'm super stoked for it. And,
nice.
And he is really funny. But with Family Guy, it's just like, it wasn't about a funny story, a funny guy going on a funny adventure anymore. It was totally. Just like, set up, knockdown, sure. Which is fun for a minute, but I just couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
But, he's a talented guy.
But the thing is, like, it was with taste. Like, to me, I enjoyed some of Family Guy back in the day. I know that I have... Comedy can be hard to get to people, to hit everybody. I'm more about the story within the comedy. Like, some of my favorite animations, like, I love Futurama. That's, like, probably my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Futurama, Venture Brothers, that's a really great show. I like story, and I like the comedy where it kind of mixes well together. I am going to say something that's kind of controversial because everyone loves this show right now, but I recently did like a season and a half binge of Rick and Morty because everyone said watch Rick and Morty. Have you seen Rick and Morty?
I've not. The odd thing is my buddy is coming over tonight and my girlfriend and my buddy and I are all going to watch Rick and Morty.
Okay.
That's been the plan.
Okay.
Because everybody's told me as well. Yeah, like, you gotta watch it.
Ever since, so this is where they get controversial. After watching about 10 or 12 episodes, I realized Rick and Morty is not necessarily my bag. I think I'm going to be more like refer me to it because, and this is nothing against Dan Harmon, but nihilist sense of humor only hits my funny bone about maybe 10 to 20% of the time. Like, because there's a lot of nihilist humor in there. And so, like, and maybe you just can't binge on it because it's just too much, like, kind of too depressing. Kind of like, I couldn't get into Breaking Bad because it was too depressing. And so, like, I was like, oh, this is depressing. It's like...
Makes sense.
Yeah, so...
No, and I agree with that, but it is. It does come down to, like, different strokes for different folks.
Totally. Like, it is a very creative show. Rick and Morty is probably one of the most original animations I've seen in a really long time. But it's the nihilist stuff that doesn't resonate with me. And this is, comes back to story. So, and this is just me being just me. I think it's hard pressed to pick anybody in the world that's a nihilist that wakes up each day going, another meaningless sunrise. So I'm like, I kind of like meaning. That's why I checked out on Family Guy. It's why I eventually checked out on Simpsons. There's good stuff in there. It's just, there's gold in them hills. Right. It's just, I need a story. I need a meaning. I need an arc. I need a care. So, and if it's just one line after the other, so. All
right. On the other end of that, the other point is, there's just too much to watch these days. You can't watch everything.
Oh yeah, there's just too much TV. Yeah,
you wouldn't sleep. So I understand that I just can't watch everything everybody tells me I should watch.
Oh, totally.
Because everybody likes, everybody has their own individual likes. So totally. Each person is going to tell you to watch their thing because they like it. But at the same time, there's also like we do kind of live in a golden age of just, for one thing, amounts of, live action and animated entertainment available. But at the same time, because there is so much, there is a larger amount of quality entertainment as well.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of good stuff out there, not because we're necessarily making a higher percentage of good material, but because we're making a higher percentage of material in general.
People are eating differently. You know, that's how I think they consume. We consume media. Like, this is the great thing. Like, what I'm hoping when Atropa is released, I'm assuming it's going to be one go, right? You guys are going to put out the whole thing, or you're going to put out an episode? You're going to do like appointment release? Do you have any idea of what Eli's?
Well, from what I understand, Here's how it's been explained to me, because we've kind of been riding on this for over a year now. Like, when's it going to get released? And I guess there were some kind of behind-the-scenes type of stuff that, like, had to get worked out first that I don't know if I'm at liberty to talk about or not.
Sure.
But from what I understand, the idea has been that it's going to be released on Vimeo, but I'm not 100% sure on that right
okay.
now. I don't know. I don't know if he told you that or not.
Yeah, he did tell me that Vimeo picked it up. He mentioned that on that episode when we were talking about it. But I get it. I mean, okay. So I assume that you are a SAG actor, right? With you're in the SAG
yes.
guild. So yeah. I'm going to say this. Most of the people that I work with is in the business-to-business realm. I don't necessarily work on TV and film that often. Most of it's commercial. And so I'm new to sort of the SAG realm. And I'm currently working on a kid show. And it's been... I mean, I can't talk about everything about it. At least not right here. But I'm working on a kid right. show. And we've got some fun actors. And we have to go through SAG. And I realize, like, wow, this is a lot of stuff that I'm not used to, all the contracts upon contracts and things that you can't talk about and you can do. And so, I mean, I get why it's there, and there's definitely a benefit to established companies, but when you're a smaller house, you're like, what is all this hoops, man? This is like a circus.
Right.
So it's like, what can right. I do? It's
like... Well, and for me, it's more of a courtesy because I don't recall ever signing anything that said I can't talk about A, B, and C, but...
Oh, okay.
As far as I know, it sounds to me, I'm just not sure what I can say because I'm also not 100% sure what's going on, and I don't want to put something out there, and they're like, no, that's not what we're doing, because, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, that's like the equivalent when you watch the trailer, like, where was that scene? That scene in Rogue One,
yeah,
it's
exactly.
not there.
Where are all those scenes from Rogue One? Where are they?
Come on!
Because for example, I think somebody posted on the Facebook page for Atropa, they said, oh, is this going to be on Netflix?
Ah.
And somebody said, we hope so. Like, I think somebody running the page said,
okay.
we hope so. And I was thinking of it, and it's like, because our episodes are shorter than normal episodes, I
okay.
think. I think they're just like 12 to 15 minute episodes,
oh, okay.
if I recall correctly. Kind
okay.
of, I'm not 100% sure on that, depending on the edit. That's not the format that Netflix currently uses, so I don't know. And plus, if they're released on Vimeo, is it a Vimeo original series? Is it exclusively on Vimeo, or can it be released on other streaming formats? I don't know. So
yeah, that's the silly contract part, right? You know, like, we're just like,
yeah.
I got the wrong profession.
So,
should have became a lawyer.
From what I understand, it's going to be released as a Vimeo original series. That's what I've been told
cool.
since the beginning. If that's still the way it's going, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they're doing in connection with Vimeo. So I think at that point, all the episodes will be released at one time, and then you can just kind of binge them.
Oh, cool. That's
trying to think. Because I know, Alan Tudyk's series, Con Man, was a Vimeo original series.
Nice.
I think that's how they did it. I don't
okay.
think they did a weekly release. Again, this is one complete storyline, and so as you watch it, you're going to want to watch them in order. It's not necessarily episodic.
Okay.
It's a full story about it.
Well, and that's what I was saying, like, about binging, you know, I'm looking forward to just
right.
sitting there and binge Atropa, just watch the whole shebang, you know. And some people, like, I probably, if I have any sort of marathon ability, it's with shows. Like, I'm not sure if you're a Arrested Development fan.
I love Arrested Development.
Yeah. So
yeah,
when fourth season came out, I'm like, this is what we're doing, honey. This is what we're doing, okay? Like, just
when you almost have to do that with that most recent season of Arrested Development,
yeah.
because there's so much crossover from episode to episode, they're all kind of happening simultaneously.
Totally, totally. Yeah, it is, it's like one person's view. I mean, and like, I don't know, for me, the problem is we live too much online, and I hate spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I feel like there should be a special, horrible place for people who spoil things. But, but you know, the thing is, like, you don't want to go online and go, hey, I saw this, and then someone just spoils it for you. I'm like, dang it. I mean, comedy's a little different because, yeah, so I'm looking forward to just binging it, just like how the appetite we have now with media, where we can just binge shows. And that is true. And if I probably didn't binge a season and a half of Rick and Morty, it might be a little, like less, like, ooh. It's a little dark, but it is a very creative show. And that's the thing where, like Family Guy, you know, because Family Guy changed its format, it became more of like, remember when? And
right.
Wasn't there a South Park episode that made a joke? I mean, I don't really watch South Park unless someone points me towards an episode where they make a joke about these manatees grabbing random lines, and that's how they create
a script. Right, right, yeah, that's how they wrote an episode of Family Guy. It was just manatees throwing balls with words on them out of a tank. That's basically what it was.
One thing I have to say that I've always had, like, well, I have mad respect for the guys who do South Park, even though I don't watch the show unless someone tells me to watch a particular episode. I love that they can get it done quick. There's this. Do you ever watch the documentary 6 Days to Air?
Yeah, I absolutely watch that.
It's brilliant, exciting. Brilliant. I love that idea because, I mean, as an animator, I know what takes time, what doesn't take time. And if you have your characters sort of rigged and you have the backgrounds, dude, you're just ready to go. Like, go now. And so, writing those jokes, just make them as fresh as possible. That's pretty. That's a rare but cool thing. So,
oh yeah.
So That said, just, you know, just as we start coming to a close, tell me some of the stuff that you're currently nerding out on. What's currently in your playlist? What are you?
What is currently on my playlist? I sandbagged on it for a while, but I'm finally getting around to watching Iron Fist.
Oh, okay, okay. I finished that. Yeah.
And I'm about halfway through right now, but I got to tell you, with all of the kind of the negative reaction that I heard to it, or the negative response, I'm watching it now, and maybe it's because I came in with such low expectations, but I'm watching it, and I'm like, it's, I mean, it's slow, but it's not that bad.
I totally agree with you. It's first off, I don't think it's the weakest of all the Defenders. You know, like, my favorite's Daredevil.
Right.
Because he's got that religious aspect, so he has a conscience, and I love a character with like a real conviction that is beyond, like, something higher than himself. It's original and fresh. Yeah, and I didn't really get into Jessica Jones so much. It was just a little too dark for me.
Yeah, I really liked Jessica Jones.
Oh, okay.
I think I particularly liked Jessica Jones and Luke Cage is because it is, you know, kind of the exact reason why it might be put out there is because it's a strong female lead and a strong black lead.
Oh, yeah.
Black male lead. Like, yeah. I think because that is outside of the majority of what we get, particularly with comic book superhero.
Totally.
Daredevil's a white guy.
Yeah, he is a white guy.
Iron Fist is a white guy, although the fact, you know, and then people were like, oh, they're whitewashing Asian culture. But the actual interesting thing about Iron Fist is that when Iron Fist was created in 1974, that's when the Kung Fu culture was really coming up in the United States. And it was all Asian men. And so it was kind of a revolutionary idea to say, oh, but then there was this one white guy who learned it and became the Iron Fist. Like, that was the out of the norm thing.
That's awesome.
And now when, you know, in the mid-20-teens, when we release Iron Fist, people are like, oh, they're whitewashing Asian culture. Well, they're not. It's actually kind of the opposite of that, but
Are you a diehard Kung Fu fan? Are you a big fan of Kung Fu and stuff like that? Action movie type?
I enjoy Kung Fu. I used to watch it as a kid, but I don't know. Like, I'm not really knowledgeable on all of it. I've watched Bruce Lee movies and that sort of thing. But I wouldn't go toe-to-toe knowledge-wise with a guy who's been steeped in Kung Fu.
Okay. I love Kung Fu, and I've been on this massive Kung Fu kick. My favorite Kung Fu director is Stephen Chow. He did Shaolin Soccer, Journey to the West. Kung Fu Hustle. I mean, he knows how to take Kung Fu and just fantasy and comedy and just like, it's a good time. It's a good time watching his films. I agree with you. There is people are not aware of how the kind of the Asian influence, how it changed. Having Iron Fist being white was kind of a big deal. And one thing though, and I loved about Luke Cage is the nod to his silly costume that he doesn't have. He has a more modern costume. I love them having little nerdy bits in there. To me, Luke Cage is Black Superman, which I love. I want a Black Superman. Like that, he's a Boy Scout, he does good, you know. I want a good guy to have superpowers. You know, I don't want just sort of this angsty, selfish person to have superpowers. I really like my good guys being good.
I think that's the key with Luke Cage, particularly how he's portrayed in the TV series, is he does have you know, he's presented as this guy that has a very strong moral compass.
Yes.
In a world that's incredibly amoral. That surrounds him.
Totally. He's almost like, actually, to me, what makes Luke Cage so fresh, because I also think that Luke Cage has some of the best music, that series.
Oh, yeah.
But the Luke Cage one is like if Superman was black and couldn't fly and then lived in Gotham. So it's like, because it's cool. I like it a lot. Yeah. But yeah, back to Iron Fist. So I don't want to give away Iron Fist, but I tell you, the thing is, a lot of people hated on it, and I think it took about 3 or 4 episodes for me to really get hooked on it. And most of the nerdy knowledge that I dug was that you learn more about the bad guys. And like, so it was kind of like, sometimes when Batman's written poorly, at least the villains are cool.
Right, exactly, yeah.
So that's what you're digging on. You're digging on Iron Fist. That's kind of that's what you're...
Right now, yeah. But I, you know, I always love Batman. It's my favorite. We just got back from Comic-Con. I'm always on the lookout for some sort of Michael Keaton-era Batman collectible.
Oh, nice.
I saw Sideshow Collectibles, Batman, you know, like the 16-inch figure or whatever.
Nice.
You know, it was like $500, so I'm like, nope, can't do that. It's still need to, like I would literally put that on display somewhere.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Or the Velociraptor maquette or whatever.
Yeah.
I love all that kind of stuff.
Did you get the, back in the day when you were a kid, did you have the Jurassic Park toys? You remember the Jurassic Park toys?
Yeah.
With the battle-damaged T-Rex, you know? Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if they're making cool toys like that for kids now. Like, because, I popped into Toys R Us a few times, and it's kind of a circus. But I haven't quite seen... maybe I'm just too old, and, like, it doesn't have the same imagination effect on me, but I miss that. I miss those cool... Like, something about action figures back in the 90s that were so cool. So cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I used to have a huge Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle collection.
Oh, those were also some of the best. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and G.I. Joes. Those were some of the best action figures. I mean, G.I. Joe was the most articulate, and then Ninja Turtles was the most far out. You know, you get the... just like the orange T-Rex guy. What was his name? Do you remember what I'm talking about? Not T-Rex, sorry, yeah. Triceratops. The orange Triceratops.
Yeah, it was Triceratops. Yeah. I don't care. It was some sort of play on the word Triceratops.
Yeah, something.
But I can't remember.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was.
But how did you meet Eli?
Yeah, well, I just found the audition for Atropa through my own channels of being an actor, and I actually auditioned for Tony's role.
Oh.
So I basically... At the time, which was about 3 years ago, as a self-represented actor, I'm on several casting websites, and I found the project, and of course I latched onto it. So I'm like, sci-fi, spaceship, space detective,
awesome.
blah, 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 like, this is perfect.
Yeah.
So I submitted to audition for Tony's role of Cole, and I got called in for it, and when I got called in, I was like, part of the thing that you do as an actor is you... research the people you're going to audition for. So I looked up Eli and I found Henry, the film.
Nice.
And I watched it and it blew my mind.
Awesome.
And so I watched that and I went in, I read for the role of Cole, and I kind of did it as like a gruff kind of, you know, sarcastic guy. And they called me back and they said, okay, we want you to come in for callbacks, but we want you to read for Andrew Jensen instead of Cole. And I was a little bummed because I was like, oh man, you know, they didn't want me for the role I went in for.
Yeah.
But they, you know, they kind of had an idea for this Andrew Jensen character being a bit more of a gruff and sarcastic kind of guy. And so they brought me in and I did, you know, a similar character that plays to my strengths as an actor and kind of a comedian, because it's a very, you know, it's a dramatic show.
Yeah.
But my character got to bring a little bit of that levity into it, because I got to be a little bit bigger, a little bit more gruff and grumpy, but I'm also the science officer.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and so I, you know, and then they really liked that, and then I got in with them. And what happened then was, this was in, I don't know, 2013
or something? About 4 years ago. Okay.
Yeah, or 2013 or 2014. No, it was, I think it was 2013. We shot in September, I think.
Oh.
And it was originally supposed to be a proof of concept for a feature film. And they used it to shop it around to investors and studios. And basically, at the time, and still now, it's even worse now, nobody wants to buy original. Mm. They want something that's a remake or based off a book or a comic book, et cetera, et cetera. And they especially don't want to buy original sci-fi because it's such a heavy investment to make sci-fi look decent. Otherwise, it's going to look crappy and nobody's going to take it seriously. Plus, original material on top of that, nobody wants to touch it. And so then after they, you know, we shot it, 6 months later, we got to see it edited with special effects, and then they shopped it around. So then after they had shopped it around for 6 months, they released it on Vimeo. And it won staff pick, like the first week it was on Vimeo.
Oh, wow.
And then they used that as kind of a feather in their cap to shop it around more, and they were still getting the same response. People were like, we really like it. We think it's great. We love the concept. We can't invest in it right now. So then I guess they were approached by Vimeo, who said, have you sold this yet? And they said no. And they said, would you be interested in rewriting the feature film script and making it into a series? And they were like, yeah.
That's
so
awesome.
They rewrote it into a series. They went out to secure all the original actors back, and almost, I think almost exactly 2.5 years later, we're the same actors, most of the same crew, are back on the same set in the same costumes, standing in the same place, shooting the pickup shot for episode two. And then we spent about a month and a half shooting the season, and it's, you know, the rest is...
Dude, that's awesome.
Editing and getting it ready for Vimeo, I assume.
But that is the nature of sci-fi, right, bro? Like, so Star Trek started off, the first one was The Cage. For those who are diehard Star Trek fans, the original series was The Cage. It was a different captain, and they went to that alien planet to where I'm giving it away, but you know, you should know this if you're a Star Trek nerd, right?
50 years old.
Yeah, 50 years old. So they go to the place where the captain gets kidnapped by these aliens, and he's with this beautiful woman who actually isn't necessarily able-bodied. She's like horribly disfigured. But it's this whole, like, he's inside a cage. He's trapped with this beautiful woman. Ooh, so horrible. But anyways, that one didn't land. But they still had Leonard Nimoy as the Vulcan, you know, science dude. He was in the second one when they finally get the captain everyone loves, which is Captain Kirk. And so that's kind of the nature of sci-fi. You know, sometimes it's not the first take that sticks. You know, and that's awesome. I'm so glad you guys were so diligent. I'm so glad that it's coming to like fruition. Yeah.
Hey, you're telling me, and I would love it if they wanted to continue making more of these and do like a second season or whatever.
Nice.
Like, that would be incredible.
Nice. Yeah. That's awesome.
It would both simultaneously be work and it would be contributing to something I'm really passionate about. I really love.
Dude, I know being part of a sci-fi, like a loved sci-fi thing. That's kind of like a guaranteed seat at a table at a con for, you know, for decades. I think that's every nerd's fantasy, right?
Yeah, I'm praying for the panel. I'm praying for the Atropa panel at whichever con will take us at.
Yeah, because the thing is, cons are getting so ridiculous nowadays to get in.
Okay.
You have to almost be there and have tickets to buy tickets for the next year's tickets.
Oh,
it's insanity. But I mean, maybe it's just like it's a good thing, but it's also like it's a changing thing. So there's more conventions now. As long as you still have the spirit of nerding together, you know, friendships and nerd building, it's good. So, but yeah. Last thing, I know you got to get to one. You said
last one.
Yeah. Last one. Sorry. So okay, you said you did music. So, did you ever have any signed bands, or was it just like you kind of played bars and thing? What was sort of your...
Yeah, we mostly just like traveling around. We toured a little bit, but we never really signed with a record company. We had an opportunity to sign with a really super small record company, mm-hmm. but it ended up kind of falling through, and I'm kind of glad it did, because eventually it just became... It's very expensive.
Oh, totally.
You know, you can't... because you're spending money on gas and instrument upkeep and staying in hotels and figuring out where to stay and all this kind of stuff. So we toured around the Midwest for, you know, we kind of tooled around, I should say, the Midwest for the better part of 2 years. And then eventually we were like, you know, this is, it's just not something we can sustain anymore. It's a blast. And again, it goes back to that collaborative art thing, you know, when there's four of you making music together, you know, right, playing a song.
Yeah.
And drums and the bass and the guitar and all that, and you're all in sync, you've all rehearsed so much that you all know exactly what's happening, and you can put on a good show for a crowd. Again, yeah, it comes back to the showmanship thing, the performing, almost just, it is just telling a story on stage in front of people with music instead of with, you know, acting and that sort of thing.
Yeah. I was talking to Tony about how when you play music, you know, it's the thing where you can say, hey, man, I just broke up with my girlfriend. I'm like, I don't want to hear your problems. But then when they grab a guitar, you're like, all right, let's hear your problems.
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
I used to do music. I was a pro musician for a long time, and I worked with some studios. And this is not like it really matters anymore. But I like the music scene. Like after I got married is when like music became less interesting to me altogether, because sure, itinerant lifestyle, man, that living like a gypsy, I mean, and you're probably not going to make great money or much or anything. You're just breaking even.
Right.
And so you got to... Yeah, and even if you're built for it, you wear out. You got to have a home base.
Absolutely.
And so that's the thing about music. I think when you play in bands, when you do that sort of thing, there's more stability if you get involved with like compositions for like films and shows and stuff like that. But overall, man, it just wears you out having to move all the time and just like sleep. If I had to sleep on a couch right now, I'd be like, oh man, it's like I get a backache if I sit in an uncomfortable chair at a bar. Right. So it's like this is 3 months of this? No way. Thanks again, Ben. I really appreciate it, buddy.
Again, thank you so much for having me.
Anyways, before we wrap this up, do you want to give everyone kind of a place where we can find your social handles so they can give you a shout out?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, all of my social media is Ben Cleaver. It's at BenKleever.
Nice.
That is, you know, my Instagram, my Twitter. If you look me up on Facebook, you'll find both my personal and professional pages.
Okay.
I don't do a lot of Facebook. I try to keep up on it a little bit, but yeah, it kind of always gets shoved to the back of the queue. But I'm mostly active on Instagram. And secondarily active on Twitter, mostly because my Instagram kicks to my Twitter. I try to be as active as I can on social media. And if you also go on to Instagram and you search the hashtag BK421,
okay,
I generally tend to hashtag all of my Instagram posts with that, so you can usually find me through there.
Nice.
I think another like a purse company from Europe somewhere also uses that hashtag for some reason.
Okay.
And then a couple other random pictures, but most of them are me.
Okay. Cool.
Of course, it's a play off of TK421.
Nice.
From Star Wars.
Nice.
But it's my initials, BK, so.
Very cool. Very cool. Thank you so much, Ben, for being on. We should probably have you back on when Tropa, lands. So that'd be great.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I would love to.
Yeah, and I can talk to you about your what was happening when you're doing the what, you know, that would be, I'm looking forward to digging into the nerd with you, man. So
absolutely, and there's some fun scenes. I got to shoot some fun scenes with that. So
yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing it myself, because I'm basically you've seen as much of it as I have, except for that ADR session. You've seen as much of it.
Oh man,
I have, so.
I feel so lucky. Well, and that honestly is the coolest thing about this podcast. You know, I met Eli, when I met Tony, and then I met you, and it's like, I'm just, before you know it, it's a whole cast party.
So, oh, yeah.
This is great. So thank you so much, Ben. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and to remember to go forth and nerd.